Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac.
What happened?
And this is Breakthrough Thinking. And I think we have, a little technical difficulties. We heard a delay. I heard myself. That usually doesn't happen. Our guest is looking at me like, wow, I hear him in stereo or something. And I was hearing myself in stereo. That was interesting. Mitch, have you ever heard of that?
Just now.
Yeah, that was interesting. It was like, you know, The Exorcist. My mouth was moving, but nothing was coming out.
And
then my mouth stopped.
The other day?
What?
You saw the movie on TV the other day?
No. Did you see it?
Yeah.
Wow.
My daughter was watching it and said, you got to see this.
Wow. But anything can happen on live radio. That's
a wild phenomenon.
Now we're scaring our guest. He just left the building. Anyway, this is Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And if it is, this is my introduction to Mitch Spien, the bottom line. If it's the first Tuesday of the month from 2 to 3, it must be the bottom line starring Mitch Spien. Or should I say Mitchell Spien?
Either way works.
You can call me Mitch or you can call me Ray. Remember that commercial?
Don't remember that one.
Oh, you're too young. Okay. Anyway, so Mitch, welcome to the show.
Well, welcome to you, too.
It's been a long time since we've talked. Okay, maybe it was this morning. Anyway, we have a great guest. And, of course, before we get to the guest, the bottom line is all about helping businesses really become more profitable and just not more profitable, but have more joy in their business and their life.
But they've also got it's not just looking at the bottom line, but looking at the whole picture. You know, yes, we want to help create more revenue and create more wealth, but it's more satisfaction in all parts of your life.
Which is critical in today's world, even in yesterday's world, but even more critical today as we're going to talk to our guest about that because people are just stressed. I mean, the economy has people going in circles, and it's interesting to see that. But we're here to help. We're here as a resource. Mitch Spien, one of the two greatest CPAs I know.
Well, thank you, and you're one of the two best CPAs that I know.
Wow, so who's number one, who's number two? I bet I'm Avis, right, or Hertz. Which one came in second?
Right now, it used to be Avis for second. Today, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm probably Avis, and you're Hertz. Okay, it hurts to be Avis, I got to say that. Anyway, let's welcome to the show Rick Shapiro, president and CEO of the Wheatley Group, merger and acquisition advisory firm. That sounds sophisticated and advanced and exciting.
Well, yes, we are an M&A firm. We get involved in helping business owners sell their companies. We work with owners. We work with buyers who are looking to sell, who are looking to acquire small companies, larger companies. We've been doing it for over 20 years, and it's quite a complex exercise. And as when you talk about companies, there's a starting point, there's an end point, and there's lots of areas in the middle. When people start a company, when they get involved in a company, what do? They either started from scratch, or perhaps they acquired the company. If they acquired the company, somebody sold the company. And then there's that lifespan of owning a company, and when you go down the road during that lifespan, whether it's 1 year or 35 years, somebody is contemplating selling the company and or acquiring the company. So there's a lot of things that go into the whole exercise of buying and selling companies and representing and advising people who want to sell and acquire companies.
It sounds like it, and that's a very important a role that you play for companies because I suspect that when you either acquire one, especially if you've built it from scratch, it's like a baby. It's emotional attachment. You could come in with an objective point of view, I suspect, and really help people maximize value and maybe even act like a therapist in a way and have them get over what they're now selling.
Well, yes, you have to have a psychology degree to do what I do. You have to have a – no, I'm just kidding. but frequently I feel like a psychologist or a counselor And you talked about, you mentioned the fact that essentially of emotion. Somebody owns a company for a long time. Sometimes they look at that asset, that company, as an entity that generates cash flow. They sell the company, and they're just looking to maximize value. However, there are a lot of people who own a company for 30, 35 years and become very emotionally attached to it. And sometimes their objectivity is not there during the sales process. Sometimes they're not always logical and even keel. So we do counsel our clients very closely. When it comes to maximizing price, gosh, there's so many things that are part of that process.
It also sounds, because of your talking about the longevity of businesses, that if you get involved with these individuals early on when they've essentially maybe got a mature company but they're not contemplating selling yet, it might make it easier for you to transition them when they do determine, because they've done the planning that they're planning on getting out of the business, it could help them down the road there too.
Right. It's quite common that we get involved with owners 3, 4, 5 years prior to going to the marketplace to sell the company. It's called preparation. I would say at least 50% of the people who sell companies wake up one morning, they find our name through the phone book, through referring sources, and say, I want to sell my company, I want to do it as soon as possible. However, it is much more advantageous to start the preparation process 2, 3, 4, 5 years in advance. There are lots of things one can do and one should do which will ultimately generate a maximum price, terms, conditions, efficiencies, transition when it comes to that exit strategy and selling that company.
And what are some of those things that people should be doing 3, 4, 5 years in advance? What are some of the key items?
Well, let's
besides contacting you.
Well, let's talk about one thing, for example. Thank you. Financial information. Lots of people don't handle their financial information. You guys would both certainly understand that, since we have the number one and number two CPAs on the planet in this room. But financial information is extremely important to evaluate, to recast, and to handle. Some people have audited books. Some people have reviewed books. Some people have something called compiled financial statements. And some people have the shoebox approach, if you will. And it is critical that one maximize revenue, maximize cash flow. Do an exercise called recasting cash flow. Sometimes people run a lot of personal items through their companies, and that's not always the best idea. They're essentially playing games with Uncle Sam, and it's not the best idea when it comes to a buyer looking at the company years later. And when a buyer looks at a company to acquire, they're going to look at the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years of financial statements. They want to see good trends. They want to see efficiencies. They want to make sure that things are going in the right direction, and they want to see a maximum bottom line. I know that it's the exercise of many CPAs to minimize tax liability, certainly. However, you must be careful when you go to the marketplace to maximize that bottom line, especially if a buyer is looking to acquire a company with bank financing, because the banks want to know that you have significant pre-tax net income being generated by this company.
In other words, they want to be able to pay the loan off. So through the cash flow stream.
Absolutely. It's important to capture all revenue. There are some businesses, quite honestly, which are cash-oriented businesses, but it's important to put that cash in the corporate, in the balance sheet, in the P&L, so it can be recognized in the tax return. Otherwise, it will not be recognized as cash flow, ultimately, at the end of the day, when one is selling your company. So handling financial statements very carefully from year to year, analyzing them, recasting them, reconstructing them, is something that we do on every transaction. We look at every line item very, very carefully. So owners of companies contemplating selling in the next 5 years, make sure you work closely with your CPA or an advisor who can do that for you, because they will understand what a bank is looking for, what a buyer is looking for, because at the end of the day, nobody has to buy your company.
Now, let me get back to the cash. You said recasting cash flow. The other way, I guess, to say it is you normalize cash flow. You're taking out things that may be not reoccurring or certainly things that shouldn't be there, like you said, personal items.
Non-customary business expense, non-recurring business expense, atypical business expense, those types of items can be recast to the bottom line, adjusted to the bottom line, if you will. The bottom line is called many different things in business transactions. Some people call them EBIT. Some people call it EBITDA, EBITDA minus CapEx, pre-tax net, adjusted earnings. They all have different meanings. They're different acronyms, but essentially we want to normalize, as you said. That's a fair word to use.
And we call the bottom line here on KXXT 1010 AM the Mitch Spien Show. That is the bottom line here. Okay. Now, who does the due diligence? First of all, why don't we talk about what due diligence is, how you define it, and who would do it? Would you do it? Would the CPA do it for the company from the buyer's point of view or whatever? And then also comment on some of the mistakes I've seen where people don't do a very good due diligence, people that buy businesses, and they end up with probably the quality of the due diligence they forgot to do.
And I've also seen where they've taken more interest in the heart rather than the brain. In other words, they're not looking at the facts. They're doing it because of emotions.
Yeah,
so you got to try.
That makes sense.
There's two kinds of due diligence. Well, there's lots of kinds of due diligence. We'll get to that. There's the seller's due diligence as well as the buyer's due diligence. But the major due diligence really is on the buyer's side. The buyer is coming to the table with money to buy a company. They are wondering, what the heck am I getting into? What is this company all about? Because the seller has all the knowledge. They've owned the company for many, many years. They understand the infrastructure, the financials, the marketplace, et cetera. So the buyer is essentially doing due diligence all along, but there is a serious due diligence time period when they get heavily into books and records and other things. So they need to get into the financial. There's financial due diligence, for example, tax returns, profit and loss statements, balance sheets, cash flow statements, getting heavily into what's behind every line item. They have the right to ask and to see everything in those financial statements. They can see bank deposits. They can see invoices. They can see purchase contracts. They have also the right to get involved in operational due diligence. What are the operations all about? They do have the right, if it's agreed to by the seller, to talk to a couple of key employees in the company. This can be a sticky wicket and a point which can be of great concern to a seller, because they don't frequently want the employees to know that a company is for sale. Because what if this deal does not close? What if it doesn't happen? Then they've been apprised of the fact that something is for sale. But there's marketing due diligence. There's legal due diligence. Are there any legal issues that are of concern regarding this company? Any historical lawsuits? Any regulations? Any other issues that could rear their ugly heads after closing and impact the buyer to his or her detriment? So on the buy side, there's a lot to do.
And so who does it? Do you do the due diligence, or who does
it? We assist. Now, it depends who we represent. If in a particular transaction we represent an acquirer or a buyer, then we will assist. We don't do this heavy lifting due diligence, but we certainly guide them. Somebody like Mitch would get seriously involved in the financial due diligence. An attorney might get involved in the legal due diligence.
And where would I get involved? Okay, I'm just kidding. Now, I'd get
well,
them
are you
on the
hurt,
radio.
Are you Hertz or Avis?
Yeah, I'm Avis, I think. But it does Hertz, like I said, to be Avis.
Right.
Now, they should have used that as a commercial. I think I just made that up. What do you think, Mitch? That's a good one, right?
I think that there's plenty of that can be done. We're staying on the high road here.
Oh, yeah, good point. Now, let me ask you this. Actually, let's take a break right now. We're at the first break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Rick Shapiro, the president and CEO of the Wheatley Group Merger and Acquisition Advisory Firm. I like that. And, of course, this is The Bottom Line starring Mitch Spien. We'll be right back.
How healthy is your business? Is your business plan helping your bottom line? Do you even have a business plan? Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business has over 25 years of helping businesses of all kinds and sizes to get them where their owners want them to go. She uses her special wellness check process. It's to assess where your business is now, and then uses her own unique 7-steps business excellence plan to expand and grow your business into something to be proud of. Barbara will take a holistic or a global appreciation view of your company. And that's absolutely going to make a difference to your bottom line. So call now and schedule a wellness check and watch your business grow. 602-750-4518. That's Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business. 602-750-4518.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is The Bottom Line starring Mitchell Spean. What's your middle name, Mitchell?
Brent.
Mitchell B. Spean is what we'll call you. Brent, remember Brent's Deli?
Not personally.
No, I thought you went there a few times. Remember in California?
Not that I can remember. It's been too long.
Must have been with your parents. Okay.
That's it.
That's what it was. Anyway, we have in studio special guest Rick Shapiro, president and CEO of the Wheatley Group, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. So we've been talking some technical stuff, but before we go on, we got to get your background and why you're qualified in this capacity. So, Rick, give us your background.
My background.
When did it all start?
Well, let me see. I moved to Arizona about 31 years ago from a small hamlet back east. You may have heard of it. It's called New York.
Oh, wow.
About 25 miles from Manhattan. I used to practice law. Don't hold it against me. I used to practice law.
In New York.
In a former lifetime, back in the Big Apple in Manhattan. Correct.
Wow.
And then I moved out here and practiced law briefly here in Phoenix. Quite frankly, I did not love the practice of law. Did not love the practice
What was
of law.
It about it you didn't like?
You'd have the senior partner of a firm come up to you with a large file, which was fine. He'd say, read this file by Tuesday, Rick, and we represent XYZ. So I'd read the file, and I said to myself, self, I'm not sure I love XYZ. I like the other side better. So when you're an attorney, quite honestly, you are a hired gun. You have an obligation to zealously represent your client, which is fine. But I didn't exactly feel comfortable doing that all the time if I didn't feel comfortable with that particular side of the lawsuit.
Interesting.
So, but it's a great legal background. It's a great education totally fantastic background for anything you do in the business world.
Now, what brought you from the Big Apple to what do they call it?
The Grand Canyon State.
No, the Valley of Ashes or whatever they call it.
Right, right. Three words, quality of life.
Yeah, good point.
That was it. I was contemplating moving somewhere between Fort Lauderdale and San Diego, and the Phoenix metro area looked like a nice place to live. So I landed here 31 years ago.
It's nice, isn't it?
Oh, I love it. It's I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else.
And New York, were you an Islander fan, a Ranger fan?
I was more on the Ranger side, the Rangers-Knicks side, the New York Giants-Yankees side. Yes, there is a schism between the Yankees and the Mets and the Giants and the Jets.
Yeah,
that is true. I'm out here. I've been living here a long time and love it. You know, it's a little warm in the summer, but it's okay.
Now, here's a key question, and Mitch, I'm sure prepped you for this. Maybe not. Who's your favorite sports team out here?
Well, I like two sports teams. Oh, you know, I've been
to
games.
Tom, can we give him a hint? His favorite sports team out here. Is there something you can give him a hint on? He's looking. Okay, who's your favorite sports team?
Do I hear a coyote in the background?
Okay, there you go. Yeah, we love the Phoenix Coyotes. We really like them. We like all the sports teams.
I root for the home teams here.
Yeah, so do I. We support, of course, Arizona Rattlers, the Phoenix Mercury, Phoenix Suns. Hopefully they'll play again. Arizona Cardinals, and, of course, Arizona Diamondbacks.
And occasionally ASU.
Oh, yeah, ASU and U of A. Ooh, did I really say that? That was Mitch. Okay, then I was just throwing my voice. Yeah, so you are still a big sports fan, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Love sports.
What's your favorite sport?
Here,
Tom, give him a hint again. What's your favorite sport?
Am I about to hear a coyote?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe he's going to play my theme song. I don't know. All right, he did it once. He can't do it again. I don't know why. We're going to have a talk after the show. Okay, so.
Well, you were asking me about my qualifications, I suppose.
Yeah.
The legal background certainly helps in when it comes to business transactions.
Absolutely.
I've got a pretty decent finance background. I love people. I enjoy people. I love business, small business, large business, medium-sized companies. Helping people get to the retirement table, helping people acquire the American dream, if you will. In this particular business, we come across all kinds of disciplines and issues, whether it's financial, legal, business, people skills. And you don't have to have an MBA or a law degree to do what we do at the Wheatley Group. Doesn't hurt, but you can learn the discipline of being an M&A advisor and selling companies and representing buyers and sellers.
Now, how has the economy the last three years or so impacted your business?
It has impacted the industry significantly, without question. 2009 and 2010 were rough years nationwide. Obviously, lots of companies, privately held companies and publicly held companies as well, have trended negatively in many cases. With respect to smaller and mid-sized companies especially, lots of balance sheets have gone into the red. In other words, they have a negative net worth. Lots of profit and loss statements have trended negatively as well. It's been a very tough time. People have had to become more creative, more efficient, more entrepreneurial to stay afloat. And a lot of bankruptcy attorneys are doing quite well, quite frankly. They have prospered the last couple of years, which is a statement of how the economy has evolved. However, there are always niche companies here or there that do well, that reinvent themselves, that are creative, and that can do quite well. We've sold companies in a variety of areas that have done well. However, I must say, the last two or three years, I have looked at a lot of companies, seen a lot of financial statements, met a lot of owners who are just not ready for the marketplace.
Do you advise them on how to get ready at that
absolutely.
Point?
Absolutely. We give them a ton of consultative advice on what to do to get back to where they used to be 3.5-4 years ago when it comes to revenue, pre-tax earnings, marketing, not making the same mistakes twice, things that they need to do to get where they want to be to sell a company to get the price they want to achieve.
My guess is that a lot of it has to do with understanding the mistakes they made. So you've got to go in there and almost identify those for them because they're not seeing them.
You know,
otherwise, they wouldn't necessarily be in the situation they're in.
Absolutely. And also there's the issue of in good times, people tend to get a little lazy. They get self-complacent. Everything is fine. They're making money. They're not as finely tuned into what's happening in their company. In tougher times, they get the microscope out and they look much more closely at what they need to do to grow the company profitably. And that is critical because you want to trend upward, certainly when you're selling a company. At least you don't want to be trending downward. You're not going to command the type of value that you want to get, nor the terms and conditions that you want to achieve on a sale.
Now, is there one particular industry that you've had more success with, most common industry that you would advise for?
Not in the Phoenix metro area. Do you remember that famous line in The Graduate many years ago?
Plastics.
Thank you. You're exactly right. If I wanted to specialize in plastics-related companies, I'd have to live on an airplane because we don't have that type of industry here in Phoenix, or we don't have that in any significant abundance, if you will. So in the Phoenix metro area, you really need to understand business, business fundamentals. We have to be quick studies. We sell companies in all different kinds of arenas. It could be everything from an aerospace company to a child care company. It could be a niche distribution company to a regional service company. So all companies have basic fundamentals innate to them, but we can learn, and we do learn, about those companies as quickly as possible.
And how about CPA firms? Have you ever sold a CPA firm?
We have sold CPA firms. Yes, we have.
And is that recently or
not too recently, to be candid with you? No, it's been a few years.
And what was the rule of thumb on that? Is it like one times gross?
It's anywhere between 80% to 120% of gross, somewhere in that realm. However, you have to look at the particulars because, let's face it, you can look at two CPA firms, CPA firm A and CPA firm B. Let's say they both have $1 million in gross revenue. CPA firm A, let's say that one generates $350,000 of pre-tax net income. B generates $175,000 of pre-tax net income. Now, should they sell for the same price or not, even though they had the same gross revenue, and we use a rule of thumb regarding gross revenue? I would contend no, they should not go for the same price because one generates far greater pre-tax net income than the other one. And that may be because of efficiencies, the way they bill. It can be derived from a number of specific reasons.
And also the type of clients they have.
Absolutely.
And I know I had a CPA firm in Century City, and I wanted to move to Phoenix, and we were heavily consultants. I mean, did a lot of consulting. And a couple CPA firms said, "We don't know how to do that, Dave. You're going to have to stay 2 years and teach us." I said, "No, I'm leaving." He says, "Then we're not buying." So, you know, it's interesting. It's also the type, like you said, the nature of it. If it's a sort of a cookie-cutter approach, you know, monthly write-ups, you know, things that just come in monthly, that's a little, well, that's more predictable, let's put it that way.
Well, you know, there's you've segued into another area which is quite interesting, and that is, for example, management. You might have a CPA firm where one individual runs the entire company. He or she is the heart and soul of the company. In the other firm, you might have four different partners. You may have management spread over several people. Or in another situation, you may have a CPA firm where they have one very large client. Concentration in revenue is in one large client. Let's say that's a 50% client of that $1 million of revenue. $500,000 is derived from one customer. In the other CPA firm, the largest client generates 5%, not 50, but 5%, which is only $50,000 of gross revenue.
Makes a difference.
Which company do you think has higher risk?
Oh, the one client, no question about it, right?
If you lose that client on a Friday because they decide they're going to go to a competing CPA firm, it's not going to make your weekend. You're going to be thinking about how are we going to survive. If you lose the 5% client, you're not going to love it, but it's not going to kill your weekend.
Yeah. You know, that totally makes sense.
So the concentration versus diversification issue in terms of client base is a critical, important issue when looking to sell or acquire.
And that would be for not just – that would be for any service.
Any kind of – any manufacturing, distribution, service, retail, high-tech, low-tech, no-tech type of company.
Now, is that part of the business fundamentals that you talked about is that – generally speaking, I'll just say generally that there should be, there's certain rules of thumbs out there not to have one client over 10%, 15%. What do you recommend? Or is it depends on the individual company?
It's certainly relevant towards the issue of risk, and risk is directly related to the issue of valuation. It's nice if you can keep the largest client under 20% of gross revenue. If you can make it 5%, Dave, that's terrific. I've seen companies where the largest client was less than 1%, and that's fantastic. But certainly the smaller the better. Some sellers take a different perspective, which I don't agree with, when they say, well, it's nice to have that nice big anchor tenant. Anchor tenants are nice for retail shopping centers, but not for companies.
And these days, it's not even nice in retail shopping centers.
That's frequently.
It's tragic
that's
out
true.
There. But you're right. I mean, in theory, that's a good point, especially the type of anchor tenant. I mean, if you have a well-established grocery store chain or something that's been around. But even those days,
they have their problems.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. And But that these are some good concepts. We'll take another break right now. And, of course, we're talking to Rick Shapiro, president and CEO of the Wheatley Group, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. I'd highly recommend talking to this young man. We'll give out your contact information as soon as we come back. This is The Bottom Line, starring Mitch Spien. We'll be right back.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is The Bottom Line, starring Mitchell B. Spien for Prince Deli. Okay, that's not funny. Anyway, we have in-house, in-house, yeah, California. Where'd your mic go? I don't even hear your mic. Say something. Say testing. Say, I still don't hear you. Say testing, 1, 2, 3. Oh, there you go.
Now I hear 1, 2, 3.
I hear you breathe. Okay. Now, what we have here, we have Rick Shapiro, president and CEO of the Wheatley Group, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. This has been fascinating. I do have a question here, and I know Mitch has the same question. The Wheatley Group, you're the founder, you're the president, you're the CEO. Where did you get the name Wheatley Group? Unless you changed your name to Shapiro, it used to be Rick Wheatley. No, maybe not.
No, but it's funny when someone calls my office and asks for Mr. Wheatley. I know it's not a close personal friend. No. I thought back years ago. I was thinking, what do I want to name this company? And I went through the thesaurus and the dictionary, and I tried to come up with some catchy names: XYZ Capital, XYZ Mergers and Acquisitions, XYZ Investment Banking. And then one day I just started thinking, you know what? The name of my high school was Wheatley High School, the Wheatley High School. And I thought it had a catchy name. So I just decided to call up the Wheatley Group. It was named after my high school.
Well, you know what, and I'll ask you too, Mitch, after I say this, is it reminds me of, like, you know, flowing wheat fields in the Midwest and wholesome and like cool as the fresh breeze. Mitch, what do you say? You agree?
Oh, yeah. I think it really is calming.
It is very calming. So I didn't know it was after high school.
It was ju- it just it
wouldn't
was a
be mine.
Name.
Mine was just Granada Hills.
The Granada Hills group. That wouldn't too work. Bad. That might be good. So
was,
high school, huh?
It
you
was
must
just
have loved
named
your high school.
My high school. It was it's a very nice high school. I like the high
Some
school.
Some good memories.
Some very good memories.
Good yes. Dating memories? No, I'm kidding. That's
all kinds
dating.
Of memories.
So that's very cool. Where was that, in Manhattan?
Long Island, New York.
Wow.
About 25 miles outside of Manhattan.
Not bad. So, well, let's get back to the technical aspects. Let me ask you a couple things here. Is there a difference when you give advice for service-type companies versus product?
Service versus, now when you say product, are you talking about manufacturing
or,
a product
or
a retail company that sells a particular product?
Both. Yeah, so okay. There might be three aspects, a service company, a manufacturing.
Distribution.
Yeah.
And, okay, yeah, in terms of different categories. A lot of the advice is quite similar. However, there are specific aspects of each category which are different. Obviously, in manufacturing companies, they are creating something. They are making something or assembling something which brings about a new product to sell into the marketplace. When you have manufacturing companies, frequently you have capital expenditures and you have lots of equipment. So you have equipment issues. In service companies, generally you don't have equipment issues except for computers on people's desks. You have personnel issues. The largest expenditure in a P&L is frequently payroll. So you certainly have a lot more people issues than you might have in a manufacturing company where you can have some scalability and sell certain product nationwide. How, for example, in a service company, if you have a pool service company and you've got 20 trucks on the road, this is not something that is easily scalable. I don't think you're going to be doing pools in Florida if you've got 20 trucks on the road here in the Phoenix metro area. It's a regional business. However, with a manufacturing company, you might sell a particular product to people nationwide or even internationally, like a company we just sold about a month ago. When it comes to retail companies, you're talking about a radius perhaps of a few miles in terms of your customer base. Restaurants and bars, for example, may not sell to their clients who live further than 3, 4, 5, 6 miles away. Your local Cold Stone Creamery, your ice cream shop, your sandwich shop. You're probably not going to sell sandwiches to people if you've got a place in Apache Junction to others who live in Goodyear.
Now, on a service company, for example, how do you handle it if you're representing the buyer and there's one main person that has a relationship with all these recurring clients? That seems risky as well. Not just similar to the one client theory or the one client situation versus many clients, but this guy he's the glue.
Now you're taking it from external to internal. The concentration.
You're talking about.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good point.
The owner who is really the heart and soul of the operation. In other words, hypothetically, the value of that company goes home to his or her house every day.
Exactly.
And yes, that is a little bit more challenging. Certainly, we sell companies of that nature as well. Buyers need to get to know that particular owner quite well. That particular owner, post-closing, needs to transition that information and disseminate that information very carefully, whether it's in writing or between their ears, to the other individual. So there has to be some post-closing transition, consultation, perhaps employment, that may last anywhere between 90 days, 6 months, a year. It just depends on the particular industry and the complexity of that particular business. But certainly there are owners who have a lot of that information between their ears, and there may be personality issues and challenges as well. One of the key questions, I think, to follow up on that is, are these customers of that particular owner his best friends and buddies, or do they buy product or buy the service from that company because they provide a great product and or service at a fair price? There's a real distinction there, and that's important.
Yeah, I think the challenging one would be if there's some type of great bonding, you know, not necessarily best friends, but maybe just the level of service and also the sophistication of service, along with having this one person very unique to all the clients, because I think that can be a really big challenge often.
The key question really is in my mind, are those clients there because that particular company sells a product at a good price, provides a service at a fair price, or is it the individual people that are the key element as to why they buy that product or service.
And one way you can avoid that, I suspect, is if you were advising a seller, I would say, knowing that this could be a challenge if there's one person that really is the glue with all the clients, let's say, is that maybe a couple years before to make sure clients are starting to identify with the firm, not the individual.
Absolutely. It's called building infrastructure, really.
Yeah.
You don't want to have one person to be the CEO, the president, the chief bottle washer, the business development individual. You need to have a little bit more management infrastructure. It's a much better scenario when you go to the marketplace to sell.
Now, do you look at operational efficiencies too? So, for example, would you ever, in preparation to sell, would you like hire someone that does total quality management, Lean and Six Sigma, to really start to make that part of the business operationally efficient, which translates into the bottom line?
Well, certainly, I think from a business standpoint, in terms of best practices, it would be important for someone to do that along the way anyway, regardless of whether they're going to the marketplace or not. You want to build in the greatest efficiencies so you have the greatest net margins, the best gross margins, gross profit margins, to generate the best bottom line. That should be inculcated into their general practices regardless. However, if you're contemplating going to the market, let's say in 2 or 3 years from now, you certainly want to maximize on those efficiencies to generate the best earnings picture that you can. So, I mean, no, we don't play management consultant. That's a different hat. But do we give people lots of consultative advice in that area over the course of prior years before going to the market? Yes, we do. Should they hire somebody, an astute CPA like the gentleman in this room, or somebody else to do that? Certainly.
I totally agree. I would hire Mitchell Beespain right there. I'm watching him. He's hurt. Now, let me ask you this. How do you find your buyers and sellers? I mean, you must network a lot, or it's just not networking. I'm sure it's specific associations, organizations, key people. That would seem important, I would think.
Yeah, no doubt. I've been in the M&A business over 20 years now. Strictly in the merger and acquisition industry. I've done a lot of public speaking historically at major conferences, both locally, regionally, and nationally, and have made a lot of contacts in the legal field, the accounting field. So primarily it's referral, attorneys, CPAs, bankers, financial planners, reputation, things of that nature. Yes, we continue to do some networking. You always should be doing some kind of networking and proactive marketing in any capacity, in any industry, certainly. So we get involved with that. On the buy side, we certainly have a list of hundreds and hundreds of buyers with their criteria in terms of what they want to acquire. We do get phone calls literally every day, either snail mail, email, or phone calls from private equity groups nationwide, factually. There's well over 2,500 private equity groups in this country looking to acquire continually, and M&A advisors are conduits to businesses. So there's a whole variety of ways that we procure sellers and buyers, the internet, trade shows. It used to be snail mail, but not nearly as much these days.
Well, that makes sense. And let me ask you about Arizona specifically. What's the climate like out here, the marketplace right now?
The marketplace is still challenged, quite honestly. It is tough. I do see a lot of companies leveling out much more than they were a year ago. I see a slight uptick with some companies. I'm not going to say they're dramatically going in the right direction, but they're moving positively, slowly. The banks have not loosened up as much as I believe they could and should in terms of giving people money to acquire companies. So they're a little bit tight on dollars. Therefore, sellers need to be a little more flexible on terms when they sell their companies, if they want to sell at this point in time. And, buyers are a little bit nervous. They do a little bit more deeper due diligence, which is understandable, certainly, given the last 2 or 3 years. But the climate going forward, do you have a crystal ball around the office here?
I do. I have one right here. Let's see. Let's put it looks good. No, it's snowing. Sorry. It's snowing in Arizona.
I've got that crystal ball as well. Yeah. But I think next year, 2012, should be a little bit better. Let's hope that things get better. Let's be positive and optimistic.
Absolutely.
Well, you got two things going on there. The one question, given Dave's favorite topic.
Coyotes?
What would you suggest the NHL do, since they own the Coyotes right now and they've been trying to sell for how long?
2 years.
How would you advise them?
That's a good question. I like that.
I have no idea.
The first year was tough because it was in bankruptcy, so you had to be a bidder. And well, I don't know if you know that.
Put Bobby Orr on the ice, Wayne Gretzky. That's a tough one. It's very tough when you have companies that are in a bankruptcy scenario or close to bankruptcy, quite honestly. You're not going to sell with the same fundamentals as if the company's highly profitable.
Well, especially sports teams. Have you ever sold a sports team?
We're not involved in selling major sports teams.
Okay.
No.
That's a whole different ballgame. I mean, it's interesting. I'm not a specialist in that as well either. But if you look at it, a lot of them have these losses going on. But the value, the appreciation of these teams have gone up dramatically. Some people may just be buying it for the appreciation. That's a whole different concept, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly there are people that buy it for. I mean, that's a very different industry sector, sports teams.
Yeah.
It's got that pizzazz, that sex appeal. You know, I own a sports team. Many years ago, it was the power of the pen. I own a newspaper, but there's a real contraction in that arena. Certain industries are in favor in certain times in history.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we'll take one more break. We are talking to Rick Shapiro, president and CEO of the Wheatley Group. And this is The Bottom Line with Mitch Spean. We'll be right back.
How healthy is your business? Is your business plan helping your bottom line? Do you even have a business plan? Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business has over 25 years of helping businesses of all kinds and sizes to get them where their owners want them to go. She uses her special wellness check process. It's to assess where your business is now and then uses her own unique 7 steps business excellence plan to expand and grow your business into something to be proud of. Barbara will take a holistic or a global appreciation view of your company, and that's absolutely going to make a difference to your bottom line. So call now and schedule a wellness check and watch your business grow. 602-750-4518. That's Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business. 602-750-4518. At Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is The Bottom Line, starring Mitchell Spean and special in-studio guest Rick Shapiro, president and CEO of the Wheatley Group.
merger and acquisition advisory firm. This is good stuff, Rick. I love this stuff because it's not about just buying and selling. This is information every company that's in business should know. And, it just doesn't apply if you're going to buy or sell.
It really is the infrastructure.
Yeah, you got to have a good structure. And I'll tell you right now, my experience, probably Mitch's, and we'll get yours, is, how inefficient really are most businesses? To me, it's like ridiculous. I mean, they don't understand some of the best practices. And my thing, I don't know if Mitch told you, and don't hold it against me, I'm a master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming. Ever hear of that? Tony Robbins is the...
Tony Robbins, I certainly know of.
Yeah, and that's what NLP is. Peak performance efficiency. But the bottom line is most people only work up to their self-imposed limitations. And even if you have best practices, you're still limited. That's just my commentary today on psychology.
Regarding that issue, I have yet to see ever, and I've seen thousands of companies, the perfect company. I've yet to see a company that is totally efficient in all areas, ever.
They wouldn't be for sale.
they'd be for sale for a huge premium. But there are reasons people sell regardless, even if they're doing well, because you cannot sell a company at an optimum price if you're not doing well. You want to sell when you're trending upwards.
Yeah.
And there's lots of reasons to sell, certainly.
So, one message is, people need to wake up, especially in this economy, and really start recognizing that they're not the expert in business. You better hang around people that know, like yourself, maybe Mitch, maybe myself, or a whole assortment of other great consultants to say, hey, this is what you could be doing, but you're choosing to struggle, and maybe it's not a conscious choice, but you're still struggling because you refuse or you just don't understand. There's some other great tools out there to immediately have an impact.
Get that team together.
Let me give people a bit of advice. And when I represent, whether I represent a seller or a buyer, and we bring about a transaction, I tell every buyer to do this. I don't think more than 5% actually do this, but set up an advisory board of directors.
Totally.
An advisory
agree.
Board of directors of, let's say, five people who are sharp, astute business people. Now, they don't have to be necessarily brilliant in your particular industry niche, but it's good to have one or two in that niche. Maybe it's someone who's retired, who's non-competitive. Maybe somebody from out of state who's non-competitive. Maybe your attorney and your CPA. Maybe a business generalist who's very astute when it comes to business issues, and meet with them at least quarterly. Share with them an open book of all of your financial information, all the issues and things going on with your company, and pay them quarterly. Everybody likes to be heard. Everyone likes to talk and give their opinion. So pay them a few hundred bucks each quarterly to review your numbers, come up with suggestions, get your ego out of the way, and let them have the ability to make a dispassionate, objective, critical analysis of your operation, which will be helpful to you. It'll be the cheapest advice you ever get to grow your company.
And I would recommend also for owners or anyone that influences their company is to get out of their own way and really recognize that often they're the obstacle for growth, and whether it's ego or whatever the case might be. So I see that a lot, and it's doesn't make them bad people. It just makes them limited people.
Limited when it comes to running and growing their company profitably so it can maximize to its greatest efficiency.
No question about it. Now, we have about 3-4 minutes left. One last question is, is this a good time to buy? I mean, who are some of the buyers out there? Are they just investor-type groups, or are they active participants?
There's all kinds. There are investor groups who are looking to acquire, be they public companies, larger privately held companies, private equity groups, and individuals who want to be the active presidents who will be working away 40, 50, 65 hours a week to buy companies. Yes, it is a good time to buy. The challenge, though, is it's hard to find good companies to buy. You have to be patient when you're looking to acquire a company. Keep in mind, if you're looking for the perfect company, it's not going to happen. There is no perfect company. The issue is when you see some challenges with that company or problems with that company, are they opportunities? Are they things that you can turn around? Do you have the ability to improve upon those issues that perhaps the prior owner did not have the ability to handle? So, yes, there are a lot of companies for sale. Look at them closely. Look at them carefully. But there are certainly opportunities to acquire companies because a lot of people want to get out, too. They're just having their own challenges.
Well, that makes sense. And also, one last thing is this, is typically, at least my understanding, you can chime in on this one, is, you know, you look at historical data, you usually come up with maybe a price based on past performance, number one. But I was always a big proponent, especially if I'm representing the seller, to sell on potential. I know that's challenging. However, there are certain things that maybe the seller has not done, put in place, that once the buyer comes in, that if they did put it in place, it would generate a significant more profit and cash flow. Your comments on that?
Certainly, if you're wearing the seller's shoes or advising a seller, you want to articulate the most compelling issues and possibilities that you can to a potential acquirer. You certainly have to talk about potential because a buyer is buying the future. He's not buying the past.
Exactly.
He certainly is looking at the past as an indicator of what the future may bring. But you need to also talk about opportunities, things the seller did not do, things that a buyer can do to grow the company to the next financial level. So when they sell the company, they can reap a very nice payday down the road.
Now, do you have buyers coming in just for that purpose, looking at companies and they don't really care about the past except as an indicator of maybe a lower value they can buy, but they're like licking their chops saying, wow, look at what we can do with this company with a few different changes, and voila, they get a low price but a high return.
Certainly. Sure. They're not going to tip their hand and say, gee, I'm going to pay you a heck of a lot of money.
No, but potential. But if you're representing the buyer, do they share that with you and say, wow, this is something that could be phenomenal?
Absolutely. We have those private discussions when I represent a buyer. And, of course, on the same deal, we don't represent a seller and buyer in the same deal. We can't do that. Our fiduciary obligation is to one or the other on a particular transaction.
That's good to know, because isn't in real estate you can actually represent the buyer and the seller?
You can have something called dual agency, but I think that's very dangerous because I don't think you can be technically an absolute dual agent, because somewhere in the conversation you're going to say to the seller, gee, I think we can do this, or I think we can do that. Well, who are you really representing then?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. But it's somehow legal in Arizona. I never could figure that one out with real estate.
Real estate is different than selling companies. Companies are like live organisms. They're constantly evolving. They're constantly changing. Customers change. Management changes. Industries change. But when it comes to real estate, it's more static. It doesn't change as quickly.
Do you negotiate the deals too?
We negotiate all of our deals.
Oh, you must be a good negotiator.
We try our best.
Wow. I think that's a great skill, by the way.
Thank you. We negotiate on behalf of our clients on every transaction.
Wow. So you take an objective point of view. You don't want to get emotional at all, and you do the best you can.
We learn to play poker, and we do the best we can to reap the best benefit for our client, whether it's the seller or whether it's the buyer.
That's right. I saw you on ESPN, the World Championship of Poker. No, Gabe Kaplan was actually one of the champions about 6 years ago or something or longer. Anyway, wow, we're at the end of the show. How do they get in touch with you? I'm excited. I think this is great information. People should call you.
Thank you.
How do they get in touch with you?
Our office phone number is 480-477-6300. 480-477-6300.
And is there a website people can look at to see what's up?
TheWheatleyGroup.com. And that's TheWheatleyGroup.com.
No spaces.
No spaces. Well, Rick Shapiro, thank you so much for coming on The Bottom Line, starring Mitch Spean. Valuable information. Boy, I'd like to have you on again. I think this is really good stuff, just for business in general, to hear these concepts.
It was a pleasure. I certainly enjoyed it, gentlemen.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And Mitch Spean, we'll see you next month. What do we have
this
next
month?
Oh, this month. Oh, yeah, we have a special edition of Mitch Spean.
That's right. On the 29th, we've got the sponsor roundtable. We're going to be talking about year-end planning, and then for our December show, we've got ADP coming in,
which is great, because if you're going to make a switch in payroll, you better make it at least plan for it right there, so you can have a good clean cutoff 1/1/12. Wow, time is flying, isn't it? Anyway, go Coyotes. Oh, I had to say it again. I love the Coyotes. But stay tuned for the Green Roundtable starting right away at 3 o'clock. Some great guests going to be on. Chris Hetz with Frank Clementi and Eric Koss. We'll be right back.
Arizona Station, 1010 KXXT, Tolleson, Phoenix.